My name is Veruska Calabria, and I'm here today to interview Anne Jordan on the 27th of July 2010, and we are at the Wellcome Trust building in Euston in London. Thank you, Anne, for agreeing to be interviewed again.
Thank you for inviting me.
That's all right. As you know, I'm here really because I want to ask you about your time on the plinth in retrospect, of course, because you had an interview taken before you went on the plinth, but we don't know what it was like once you were on the plinth and what happened afterwards. So just to recap, can you tell me again what you went to do on the plinth?
Well, I decided this was an art project for me, and I am an artist. So I was going to do some artwork. And I'd already was doing some work in Wales, where I was doing my MA in fine art, about death, about life and rebirth. And I thought, and also I was involved in doing something in the public domain. And one of my modules I had to do in my course was about public art, and so I chose to look at the fourth plinth in Trafalgar Square. And at the time I did this module, I knew the names of all the artists that might be chosen and what they were going to do, but I didn't know who was going to be chosen. So that was fine, did all that, and then of course the name was announced, it was Anthony Gormley, and that they were looking for people. And I thought, I've got to do it. I've got to put my name forward, you know. And everybody said to me, oh, you've got to, you know, if anybody's going to do it, you've got to do it. And I actually had already got something in mind what I was going to do, because it was connected with my work. So I put my name forward and didn't think anything of it. And then I got chosen. And I thought, right, okay. What am I letting myself in for? It's going to be a world stage, literally. I don't know anybody who lives up in London now. None of my family are up there, so there's no going to be anybody to see me. And then I discovered it was going to be in the evening when it was getting dark. And I thought, yes, there are some advantages, but maybe, you know, some disadvantage, because you might not get as many people seeing it, etc. But then what I had decided to do was more conducive to, I think, to being a more sort of intimate group of people around who might be observing it. So thought about it and got on the train, came up with a friend and turned up.
You mentioned about being an artist and your interest with death and using wool that you claim or find in nature.
Yes.
So why did you decide to work with this material in particular?
I went on when I was doing a BA, because I'm a latent artist, and I used to be a nurse and midwife before. So I think this has also fed into my artwork, all this idea of caring and wrapping and things like that. And I went, sorry, I've forgotten it. You're gonna edit this, aren't you?
It's okay, it doesn't matter anyway.
Oh yes, I went on a field trip in the Western Brecon Beacons, and we stayed in a youth hostel. And I did take a sketchbook up with me, but I didn't do any sketching. I just walked and I made things on site with bits and pieces, rushes, bits of wool, any stones, anything I could find at that stage. And then that night, back in the hostel, I found this scrap of paper that was written on an old-fashioned typewriter. Talked a bit about the history of the place, and it said that there was a coffin route that went over the mountain, and this coffin route was 12 miles long. What happened was in the about 1810, 1820, the price of wool had dropped completely. There were distant landlords. There were what in Wales was termed the Rebecca riots. And the young men left the farms and they walked over the mountains down to the coal mines. And a lot of them got killed because there was no health and safety in those days. And their bodies got carried back this 12 miles for burial in the villages. On the mountain itself, it's called the Black Mountain, there are a lot of Bronze Age funeral cairns. Now these are probably, 1,500, 2,000 years BC. And they're just piles of stones, and some of them are really, really big. There is also an interesting fact I found out that there was an Act of Parliament in 1667 that said that every corpse, unless they died from the plague, had to be wrapped up in a wool blanket, and this was to save the wool industry. And of course, sheep farming is still one of the most important industries in that area. And the sheep sculpt the landscape, and you find lots of odd bits of wool lying around that they've shed. And at first I started working with this, and then I started to develop the whole project, and I decided to base it around this coffin route. So I made up a story about a young man, and because it's an area of a lot of myths and legends, you've got the physicians of Mudvai who were into homeopathic medicine, and they were said to be the sons of a lady of the lake who rose up from the lake. Actually, that story is one of the basics of the Arthurian legends. So, you know, the legends of Arthur we think are very English, but in fact they came from Wales. So lots of things going on in my mind, and I wanted to still celebrate this history and to commemorate these people who died in the, you know, because in some ways the whole project was almost taking on some political sort of factions as well in it, because it was about the decline of the mining industry, or it's non-existent now virtually, and also the wool industry is not doing very well. So I wanted to highlight these things, and I wanted to sort of commemorate all these people who died. So the project took lots of different strands, but the strand which I sort of thought about for the plinth project was this idea of being buried in a shroud and a wool. And I first of all did a sort of practice of it out on the mountain, where I knitted myself into it and then sort of metamorphosized into a new life. When a baby's born, one of the first things that happens, it's wrapped in a blanket. And then when you die, you're wrapped up in a blanket again. So you've got the whole sort of gamut of your life is spread out in that. The knitting also is the yarn is like the thread that runs through your life, and the knitting itself is based on a network, or the fabric is like a network of stitches, and each stitch becomes a metaphor for every connection that you make in your life. Whether it's your body making connections within itself, it's your the way that you interconnect with people, your family, and then your friends, and then communities. So it goes, you know, it gets bigger and bigger, and it's all in one piece. The reason why I decided to choose that part of my work to go for the plinth project was, I wanted, having done my research on what all the other statues were and everything else in it, first of all, one of the reasons I applied was I'm female and there aren't any men commemorated at the moment. And all the people who are commemorated have had some sort of effect on our history. by military decisions, naval, you know, whatever. And they are, they almost connect the past with the present, because it's through their decisions is what we are now, or our country is now. And I thought about all those people who weren't commemorated, but were all the foot soldiers, and you know, who, you know, the people gave the orders, and but the rest of us die, you know, a lot more than the people, the unknown people. So I almost wanted to dedicate the piece to all those people who had laid down their lives for us, so that we are what we are now. And that's why I knitted myself into this shroud, and then I lay down, and then I re-emerged, and that was, you know, life continuing on.
Had you done a project like this before?
I'd done one public art project. I think, as I mentioned earlier, my background as you know, a nurse, a midwife, a mother, wife, carer, has influenced my work a lot. When I did my BA, my final piece was involves genetics, because a lot of my immediate family on my mother's side have all died from breast and ovarian cancer. So we probably have the faulty gene. And the first person I knew who I know had both was my Victorian grandmother. And in my final piece, she was represented by a Victorian wardrobe, because which I had restored, and then I riddled the whole back. I drilled into the back completely, it was all riddled. And on the outside it looked perfectly normal, but when you opened it there was a mirror, and you could see yourself almost reflected, and you think, you know, it's like a skeleton in the in the wardrobe. I don't know if you know that expression.
Yes.
And I was uncovering something, but did I want to know or didn't I want to know? So that was the sort of side of it. And I also I did some chairs, and one was because my mother, she had breast cancer, but she was cleared, so her chair, because a chair is very much a personal. It's very much aligned to the body and its shape and everything else. And we select chairs for people, and they take ownership of those chairs and everything else. You know, you can't sit in that chair, that's grandpa's chair, that sort of thing. So I had one that was had holes in it, but then the holes were filled with resin so that they were cleared. And then I had one that was completely riddled, and you couldn't even sit on it. So fragile, and that was terminal. And another chair that was in remission, and there were holes in it, but the holes had just been temporarily filled with plaster again, so they were soft and you didn't know what was going to happen. So that was the sort of first, one of the first bit. But I did actually, before that, having said that, I did do a piece of, which became a piece of public art, and it was at the university during my BA, and because I'm quite an ambitious person and big when it comes to my work. And took over in a building that had to be, it was an old school and had been empty for several years, and it had to be refurbished, and it was going to be the new faculty for art and design, and they bulldozed a bit and then they rebuilt a new bit. But I worked down as like an artist in residence, because I went to the dean and said, I think you need an artist down there to record what's happening. Well, I hadn't thought about that. Well, okay, you can do it as your outside project. Oh, thank you, you know, and I got myself kitted up with my steel catch boots and my hard hat, and went to work with all the contractors, and I was the only woman on site. which turned out to be quite useful in the end, because I needed some sponsorship and I played off one against the other. But what I did with this is, it was a gym block, three stories. And on one end, I had this enormous satin red ribbon. It was around Christmas time. And the whole piece was called Transfusion. Now, when you give blood in this country, it's a gift. And so I was, this was the idea of the big pink red ribbon. And then the one tail of the bow went into the top gymnasium, and it just went, came through a window and went right across the gymnasium to a door, and it was dark inside, and this was the body, and this was the main artery of the new blood that was going into the building. And then it went down the stairs, and then it went, it broke up into arteries and arterials and sort of little pools of blood. It was all made from red satin, and it was all quite atmospherically lit. And I used, I don't know how many meters of red satin. And so I had a sound piece in and with it, where I used my sewing machine. I recorded my sewing machine and I played it backwards and forwards and multi-layered it. So it sounded as if there was like a heart beating in there. And the whole idea was that there was this new blood going into the building, and it was going to, and it was not just the building was being refurbished, but there was new life going in it, because you're going to have students and staff and all that. So yeah, they quite like that. Yeah,
sounds fascinating actually.
Thank you.
But to bring you back,
yeah, I've gone off away.
No, that's absolutely fine actually, yeah. Because it's interesting to understand your life story in context.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah.
I can't pronounce this Welsh word.
Cwtch. It means a hug or a cuddle or protection. Yes.
And this is the project that you went to do on the top of the Brecon Beacons.
That's right.
After being on the plinth.
It was all during the time I was working on it. I was working on it, yes. But it sort of became almost part of it. Mm.
Did going on the plinth influence how you might have done Cwtch?
Not really, but because I'd sort of thought it through to a certain extent, both. But it gave me a lot of confidence. And in that respect, yes. And I thought, because people said to me, you'll never manage all this because you've got all these public bodies you're working with, because I had so many of them. And they all work, have a different language, they work on different timelines, they have different priorities, and trying to get them all together. And I'm sure, you know, people like Anthony Gormley, understands all this, and people have different people together, so it sort of gave me a lot of confidence to think, yeah, I can do it, I've done that on the plinth, I can do that, you know.
You mentioned in the pre-plinth interview that you're interested in the body.
Yes, yeah, I think that goes back again to being a nurse and a midwife and caring for the body. And so, yes, I think it goes back.
In fact, you mentioned that you were in London studying a few years ago, right? And you became a nurse.
Yes.
It was only touched upon in the pre-plinth interview.
Yes.
So I was interested in hearing about your full life, not just the artist.
Right, okay,
full.
Yeah. Right. Well, when I left school, which was probably 1959 or something, there weren't that many opportunities for women, the careers-wise. And there was things like, you know, nursing, teaching, being a social worker, being a secretary, being a hairdresser, working in Woolworths, that sort of thing. There weren't the opportunities there are now for them. And there is a history of people in the medical profession in my family. And my mother had started doing physiotherapy at St. Thomas's, but she went out to India with her parents. It was at that stage of her life. But one of my aunts who had trained there and she was quite an influence on my life because my parents lived abroad a lot, and I used to go and spend, I went to boarding school and I went and spent holidays and things with her, so she's quite a big influence on my life. So I chose to go to St Thomas's, I was there for 4 years, and then I started my midwifery training. So I used to go up to Trafalgar Square, you know, I knew London quite reasonably well, yeah.
And what happened after the training? Did you stay in London?
No, after then I went to Cambridge to do my midwifery training, or some of it. Then I went to, I had a few jobs around there. Then I went out to Gibraltar to work. I was there for 18 months and decided I wanted to be, because I'd only done part one midwifery, it was in two parts those days. So I came back and did my second part of midwifery. And I did that in Exeter, because my parents had retired to Devon by then, so it was quite near them, seeing something of them. And from there, I went to Birmingham and worked as a midwife in the Birmingham Maternity Hospital, big hospital, big teaching hospital. And I met my husband, got married. Then we went and lived in Lincolnshire, in Boston, and had two children. Started going back working part-time when the youngest was about 20 months, and then gradually started, you know, increasing my hours till I was working full-time, and then I had to retire because I had high blood pressure and stress. Because there were a lot of changes going on in the NHS, and I was running the all the outpatients, antenatal and gynae and children's outpatients we had there. But what I think was, for me, we introduced prenatal screening, and I was literally thrown into it, and I had to do a lot of counselling, which I'd never really been trained for, and I think it sort of, you know, burnt me out a bit, yes. But I'd always been, you know, I'd always made things, even as a kid, I used to, you know, I'd always made things and drawn a bit, and so when I retired, it was an opportunity to, I started working with textiles, embroidery and, you know, stitch textiles, so I sort of went down that line. Then my husband became ill and he had cancer, and it was quite a protracted illness, sort of like 5 years before, and he died at home. It was lovely to be able to nurse him, yes. And I've got two sons, they're both married now, but one was down in Wales, and the other was married to a Welsh girl, and one was near Southampton Way. So I decided that to move to be nearer one of them, because they couldn't come visit me on a day or today, you know. And with Mike being ill for so long, and he kept going in and out of hospital, you know, your life becomes quite, you know, quite narrow, and your close friends stay close, but I almost felt I had to start again. And he knew I wanted to go to university because everybody else got degrees and I wanted a degree. So that's one reason why I went to Wales, because I've always felt, I spent part of my childhood in Wales, so I, you know, I always felt quite comfortable down there.
Which university did you go to?
In Wales? Well, it's now Swansea Metropolitan. Mm. Yes.
And what was it like to study as a mature student?
Oh, fantastic. Recommended. No, it's really, really, really great. There were one or two of us. I was the oldest. I've always been the oldest in the group. But it didn't matter. The only thing is you had to be very careful that you, because the others were in discussions and things, because the others didn't always have the confidence or their life experiences, and you have to think, no, you've got to be quiet, you know. But I think what we lacked in some ways, like my computer skills aren't all that brilliant, and I can't hammering a nail straight and things like that. You sort of have gained because of your life experiences, and you can think much more laterally.
You mentioned that in the pre-plinth interview, actually.
Did I?
You did. You said, and now you can think about topics and things you're interested in. It doesn't put you off. You feel confident to tackle things.
Yes.
It's one of the phrases you used. And you also mentioned that in those days when you were younger, that you know, art for a woman was considered a past time.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yes, yes. My father, I think, would have been a bit horrified if he knew I was wanted to be an artist when I left school, after having paid for me to go to school. Yes, you know, I think, I don't know. Mind you, he came from a family that was very pro-educating women. Yes. Because his sisters, he had four sisters, and they all were, you know, had really good jobs. One was a consultant gynecologist, and one was a school teacher, and one was a PA to the head of Burma Oil, and one was a headmaster of a public school sort of PA. So, you know, he believed in education. He really did, and. But I think he probably didn't think an artist was what he wanted me to do. And I always wanted to please my father.
When did you realise you wanted to be an artist?
When did I realise? Well, as I say, I've always been quite interested. And I suppose when I was in London, I went to a few galleries and things like the National Gallery and odd places like that, and I had a holiday in Venice and Rome, and that sort of really opened the doors. But to actually take the steps, I suppose after I'd sort of retired, and I suddenly realised I got some time to do what I wanted to do, and I thought, yes, go for it. And it was much more open-minded, and, you know, I mean, I'm not particularly good at sort of the draftsmanship of drawing, so, but there were so many other exciting things going on. And I think my tutors were quite surprised how open-minded I was, you know, because I've had a go at everything. I've had a go at ceramics, performance, textiles, and painting, drawing, sculpture, you know. And my ideas are quite open as well, and I'm very lucky because I've also, you know, got quite a lot of friends who they're a lot younger than me, but they don't. I'm just one of them, which is fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And then I'm also, you know, running this sort of artist-led gallery where we're all volunteers, but we support emerging artists.
I was going to ask you about that, actually.
Yeah.
And you're one of the directors.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And what's the name of the gallery?
It's called Elysium. Yes. I mean, that's got a death thing to it.
Yes, explain.
Well, Swansea was bombed in the war, and it's lost a lot of its sort of historical connections and things. And we were offered this little building, rent-free, in this horrible sort of 19, some people won't say, but I suppose post-war building. And we thought, we want a different name. And we went and had a look, went to the archives in the library there, and looked at all the old plans of the area and things. And we found some, and we found that there was a medieval burial ground in that area. And opposite, there used to be an old music hall, which is now empty, and it was called the Elysium. Because Elysium means, you know, a better place. You go to a better place. So we thought, well, let's have our gallery as a better place. You know, we look on the bright side of it, not on the burial, you know. So that's why we called it that.
And before we put the recorder on, you mentioned that you're currently pushing to get 24 artists in residence there, right?
No, studios. It's artist studios, yes. We've actually had to move out of that premises, and we've got another one. and which is much bigger, and it's a rambling building over three stories, and we want to have 24 artist studios, which would be phenomenal, because there are very, very few around, and those that there are, I think, are probably geared for people who are like graphic artists, maybe some textiles, but people who don't make a mess. You know, they're going to be very basic, but it doesn't matter if they knock holes in the walls and paint the floors and things like that. We don't mind that.
How did this gallery come together?
Well, it came together before my time. It was just sort of three people two left art school, and they decided we want somewhere to show our work. And so it evolved from that. But one person is still the original, but others have come on board. So it's an evolving sort of makeup, you know, of people who run it. But three of us at Elysium have been now together for about 4 years, and so we're complete. There's one photographer, and there's John, who's a painter, and myself, and then we have other volunteers who come and help us invigilate, because we have quite a lot of shows and things. Yeah, we get a little bit of Arts Council of Wales funding, but not very much.
Yeah. So how does it compare being an artist now and having been a midwife before for a number of years?
It's very different. I feel I've moved on. It's a different part of my life completely. I don't miss it, because I'm still involved with people. I think that at the end of the day is being involved with people. And also, I suppose, because I'm now almost nurturing emerging artists, because we sort of give them a lot of support and help and, you know, and everything. There's still that sort of side is still coming out, you know, where you were caring for your patients or your mums and your babies and the dads, you know, caring for these younger.
You mentioned your parents living in India for a period of time, and that your father was very forward thinking when he came to educating women.
Yes.
Would you like to tell me your parents' names and, you know, why they were in India and
yes.
a bit of the story?
That's fine. My father comes from a family of engineers. His name was Henry Marconi Crow, and he was a construction engineer. He went into the building steelworks, and he actually Port Talbot, which is next to Swansea. He was involved in the construction of that, and he's also worked in. They met playing tennis, I think, because my mother's father was also in steel, iron and steel. This is in Middlesbrough Way, so I think my dad must have been working for him, I suppose, really, and they met at a tennis party, and my father. As I said, my mother started doing physio, and then her parents went to India, and I think my dad followed, and they got married out there. And I've got a twin brother, and we were born in Calcutta. Then, before the end of the war, my mother brought the both of us back home to England on a troop ship, and my father stayed for a couple more years. And then we were in Port Talbot. And then after that, we went to Norway. And we lived in Oslo for about 18 months. And then we lived right near the Arctic Circle, a place called Mo i Rana, where they built a steelworks. And then my father then was posted back to another part of India. So he's sort of, you know. And then he came back and worked in this country for a while before retiring. But my mother, she was a homemaker and looked after us, and she was just a housewife, homemaker.
Sounds like you moved around a lot.
Yeah, I did move around. So I think in that respect, and that's why I had to go to boarding school, and also I suppose in that respect, it's made me quite independent, because you know, at the end of the day, you have to rely on yourself. And that actually was what I felt very much so when I was on top of that plinth. It was the most extraordinary feeling, because I got really, really cold up there. And I felt quite alone. I thought, it's up to you. You've got to get through this hour. Because at one time I thought, I kept seeing the clock and I think, oh God, I've got another 10 more minutes up here. You've got to enjoy it, you know. But you do, at the end of the day, you have to rely on yourself.
What was it like when you came off the plane, do you remember?
It was freezing cold. They wrapped me up. No, it was great. I felt great. No, I felt really, really great. I felt I really achieved something. Somebody wanted me to go up to work in Drury Lane. Chap, I remember, chap shouted after me. It was really great, and I was taken back. And one of the girls said to me, "There's somebody here we think you'd like to meet." I didn't know who it was. I didn't know who it was at all. And then they took me up. We went into the port again, and it was Anthony. So it was super. So he'd seen a bit of it. Don't know how much, but he had.
And what did he ask you?
He just wanted to know who I was and where I was, from. And he wanted to have he had a good old feel of the world. And we talked about the Brecon Beacons, and we talked about a place. He knew one of the areas near where it was, and he'd been had a holiday there and walking up there. And we talked about his work too, a little bit too. Yeah, it was great. It was really great. And I had a cup of tea with him. So it sort of was the icing on the cake for me. Because I've always liked his work. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that, but I have, because of my interest in the body and everything else. And the body and the landscape and the spatial sort of complexities of the body and the space and how the two relate to each other. So, and I knew his work because I'd in my degree and everything, I had studied it.
So. Is that when you began to be interested in the body and the environment?
I've always liked the outdoors, and I've always loved the countryside and the landscape and everything else. I saw some of his work down at St Ives, an exhibition in St Ives. And I don't see the body in the landscape, I see the body as part of the landscape now. And I think probably his work certainly influenced me in that respect. You become part of the landscape, and you imbued in the landscape.
And what would you say the One Another Project was about?
One Another Project. I think it's a snapshot of life in this country now, partly. It was quite democratic, very democratic, because it allowed people, it gave opportunities to people which they'd never have before. And I thought that was just wonderful. I thought it was a wonderful gesture of goodwill and, it won't happen again. I know there was a lot of criticism in the press and things, but I think at the heart of it, I thought it was a super one. I mean, when I did my original presentation before I knew the One Another was being chosen, we had a straw poll among all the students around the table, and his came top. because of this. It was just, because art should be for everybody, not just for the art educated. And it was very democratic.
Again, just to bring you back to the experiences, a few questions I asked before the... you know, you were sent a booklet when you were told that you had a place encouraging you to construct some knowledge in your community that you were going to go up there, for example, contact the local newspaper or create your own network group. Did you do any of that?
Yes. First of all, there was somebody from the university who was another plinther, so between us, you know, we did quite a bit in the university and everything else, so everybody knew, and I think we were on probably on the university website and everything like that. And certainly the BBC website, I was on that, and the local press. Yeah, the Western Mail and the local one. Yeah.
And did you use any social networking online?
No, I didn't belong to Facebook or anything then. No, I do now. And it was also on my website. Oh, it is on my website.
Mm. What's your website's address?
It's www.annejordan-art.co.uk.
Well, did you know that there were a couple of groups that were created by the plinthers themselves on Twitter and on Facebook, as well as, of course, the one and other website where you created your profile?
Yes, I did know about them, but I didn't join them because I'm not quite sure about these. I haven't made up my mind. I know I'm on Facebook, but I haven't made up my mind completely about these networking sites. Maybe I'm a little bit old-fashioned there.
Did you make comments at all on other people's profiles on the one another website as you followed the project? Yes,
I did. One or two of them, yes. And somebody contacted me as well. Well, somebody who had exhibited in our gallery, she emailed me, and so we had that sort of little thing going on and everything as well. Yeah.
Had you known her already, or was this only a result of the plinth?
No, I had met her, but she was in a group show that we held, and then she said, "Oh, can you remember me?" And I actually did, because her work was very good. yeah. So that was nice. Yeah. Mm.
And what was it like to have these comments on your profile? You have a few here, I think, from people that knew you, in fact. Do you remember that?
No, I can't remember all those. Oh, Nell. Oh, right, yes. Now, Nell Brown is she belongs to the spinning group that I belong to, because I had to learn spin for this project. Yeah, so she's, and she, yeah. Yeah. And the other one too. She's an artist, Michelle. Sue Griffiths is, she was the other plinther who I knew. Tom is an artist who does performance and things. He's from Cardiff. I don't know who Lilac Bonsai was, no idea.
So perhaps these were new people.
Some of them. Yeah.
And did you get any comments when you were up there? Did you interact with the audience on the square?
No, I didn't. I didn't want to, because I was doing an art performance. It was, I didn't. I did hear comments, and I did at the end just shout down to a few people right at the end, but no. Because I had to concentrate.
What did you think of the other plinthers that you might have watched?
Well, I dipped into it now and again. I didn't watch, continuously or anything like that. And some of them, some of them had a rant. Some of them highlighted and represented, which I thought was brilliant, and highlighted, you know, different charities, different just things that they work for, issues and things. Some of them were really fun. Some of them were quite knowledgeable, actually. You got quite a lot of information from. What else? They were just so varied. This was the whole beauty of it. It was just a variation.
And just to look back, really, as a whole, what impact do you think the experience has had on you?
It was a momentous experience. Yeah, it was momentous. It's something I'll never forget. I'm not that bothered if anybody else remembers it or not, in lots of ways. Well, except of course it's obviously has been recorded and everything. I didn't do it solely for myself. I know I can be. I'm quite good at, you know, I talk to people. I'm not shy at coming forward, but I didn't do it to publicise myself particularly. I just wanted to do it to recognise. As I say, like I said earlier on, or I don't know whether it gave the impression, all those people who haven't got memorials, haven't got statues put up in their name, all those unknown people.
And why would you say you wanted to do that?
Because they're so important. We're all dependent on these people. They're our unsung heroes. And I don't think it mattered that it was only there for an hour, because if you look at some of those statues now, even I can't remember the name of all of them and why they're there. But even if it's just a moment in time that the other people were remembered, that for me is the essence.
And how about your friends and family? What did they think about you going on the plinth?
Well, all my friends thought it was fantastic, you know. I think they were quite envious. Oh, I wouldn't do it, though. I don't know how you're doing, you know, that sort of thing. My two boys, because I've only got a small family. Well, then one of them, they watched. Oh, but Mum, it was a bit boring. They're not into art particularly. They say, oh, Mum, as long as you're happy, you do what you want and all the rest of it. But I think actually they got a sneaking respect for me for doing it, for having the balls to go up there and do it. I said, I won't do it naked, because when I did it first on the mountain, I was naked. But I wouldn't do it naked for them. I don't think to see their mother up there, they would have been very... would have been very nice. That's all warmy, body stocking.
I saw that, but actually I was going to ask you about it. So yeah. Thanks for reminding me.
Yes.
I thought you'd had it on to keep you warm as well.
Well, I did as well. But because when you arrive in this world, you're naked. And when you go, you are. So, well, no, some people are dressed up, but a lot aren't.
Do you think it had an impact on them at all?
I think, yeah, they, you know, they still talk about it, and they still, I think they're quite proud I did it. So that's really nice, because I don't get, as I say, the eldest one especially, he admits he's a bit of a Philistine, as far as art's concerned. The youngest one is more artistic, but he went to the Tate Modern with his wife and looked round and he said, I couldn't understand half of that. What's it all about and all the rest of it? No. But I think with modern art, you have, with conceptual art, you have to engage with it and you have to think about it. And that actually was really surprised me. It's the baby. With the night I did my session on the plinth, because there were only two people that I knew. Somebody else came, I didn't know till afterwards. But I was amazed how they stayed and watched the whole thing on that cold evening. I was really, really felt very privileged that they had.
That's fantastic. Is there anything else you'd like to add about your time on the plinth, or perhaps the interview today?
Only just what I've just said. I've felt the whole thing was a wonderful privilege. I just feel it's sort of it's part of history, of London's history now. And nobody can take that away.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.